This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Each month for Marketplace's Econ Extra Credit Project, I'm watching a documentary film connected to our beats. You could watch too. What do you say? For February here, it's a film that's part of PBS Television's Independent Lens series called 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement. It's about a campaign from the 1970s for the rights of a huge part of the labor force who are often used and abused, office workers. I spoke to the directors of the film, Oscar winners Julia Reichert and Stephen Bognar.
Secretaries were viewed as office wives. Yeah, clean my dentures, go out and get my lunch, make coffee for the whole group. Yes, sew up the pants. We actually have archival footage of the boss and his secretary talking about how does she feel about sewing up his pants while he has them on. And you look at her face, and it's a very striking combination of, I better smile, to like, this was totally creepy. Remember, this was before the word sexual harassment, that we even had a name for it. And 9 to 5 was among the organizations leading to like really make us aware of that and to create laws, which we now have, that will protect women against those forms of sexual harassment, like sewing up your boss's pants while he has them on.
And, you know, the 9 to 5ers had all kinds of wonderful tactics. You know, they gave out the Pettiest Office Procedure Award or the Bad Boss of the Year Award. They went on Phil Donahue and brought their bosses with them and shamed them on national TV. They called the local TV channels anytime they were going to sort of ambush a boss to present them with some kind of bad award. It was all with a smart, sharp sense of humor, and it just leveraged public opinion in a really good way.
Julia, what do you make of the section in your film where, so Mary Jung, a 9-to-5 activist in Cleveland, is talking about organizing, and she finds that some of these office workers say they're not feminists, but notes, well, actually, let's hear her. Here's a clip.
Women, including women working, considered themselves mainstream women, didn't believe that they were feminists, but yet if you asked them what they believed in all the same things feminists believed in. And so we couldn't have a demonstration because a demonstration is considered too radical for our members. So we would have actions.
Actions seem more acceptable to the mainstream. But isn't that interesting, right? I'm not a feminist, but I believe in feminist principles. You see that even to this day, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And when she, when Mary was very creative, and when she talks about actions, an example is passing out balloons that say equal pay for equal work, as opposed to leafleting people. We're angry workers. You know, just passing out balloons in downtown Cleveland. She's a really good organizer, and a good organizer kind of recognizes what is the community we're trying to reach. And let's not have a litmus test. You know, you have to agree to these principles of feminism in order to be part of our group. No, let's just get together on what we can agree on.
9 to 5 grapples with, of course, class issues, but there's also issues of race. So there's a part where Renee Clay, she's an activist with the Atlanta chapter, is talking about, I guess there's an inquiry from Boston saying, hey, we're not getting enough black people involved here. And this is what Renee Clay says.
We met with the Boston chapter, and they were having issues in recruiting black women. So Bernard said, well, do you eat lunch with them? Do you live near them? Do you socialize in any manner with them? And the answer is no, no, no. Well, nobody believes that you want to help them when you don't talk to them anytime, you don't ask them to lunch, you don't live near them, their children don't play with your children.
It's interesting that these issues of race also play out in this, and the best ways for this 9-to-5 movement to be inclusive.
Well, different cities had more or less success with that. You know, Atlanta had African-American leadership. Verna Barksdale was the first leader, and she set a great sort of standard for inclusivity. But then Boston struggled more. And now Boston's a whiter city, of course, than Atlanta. But, you know, they were trying. They had successes. They had failures. But even before, you know, concepts like intersectionality were in the air, the 9-to-5ers were grappling with trying to be inclusive.
That's another way. I think they were kind of ahead of their time in a lot of ways, 9-to-5. And one of them was how much they really thought about and organized around inclusivity with class and race. Cleveland is another example where there was African-American leadership. Who's up at the microphone? African-American women. Who's writing leaflets? Who's at the demonstrations? Women of color, in addition to white women. And that was ahead of, in many ways, the labor movement of that time. You know, the labor movement of that time had very few women leaders and did not have many leaders of color. 9 to 5 did, though.
It's vivid in the film when 9 to 5ers reach out to other unions early on. Here's 9 to 5 co-founder Karen Nussbaum and organizers Helen Williams and Kim Cook.
Oh, God.
So we talked to 10 different unions, and some were clueless, where they said, oh, you know, we'd do more organizing here if I could just get a girl in to answer the phones more often.
You didn't feel like you were sitting with somebody who considered you their equal. It's just like you little girls patting on the head kind of attitude.
You know, they would say things like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're all too young and green to really know what it means to be in a union.
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons they created their own, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're being talked down to, and then they're told, yeah, you're going to be union organizers, but we're not going to pay you what we pay our male organizers. And that's the whole point of creating a union. And yet here, the labor movement itself was failing them, these old stodgy cigar-smoking guys.
Yeah. And, you know, the labor movement has changed a lot since then. Many of the people in the film went on to continue to work in the labor movement, but continued to push for it to have, you know, more women leaders, a more feminist approach to organizing. And it's had a big impact on the labor movement, 9 to 5, even though it was not a huge number, but the ideas and the practices were really, really strong.
And the Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton movie is a kind of cartoon version of all of this. But in your film, people feel that movie version helped the cause?
Well, I would call it a satire, and it was a very good choice to make it a satire, because as a satire, you kind of pass over the question of, are women exploited? And millions of women around the country saw that movie.
It was the number 2 box office hit of that year after The Empire Strikes Back. It was a huge hit.
And people saw it again and again. And it actually raised the prospects of the 9 to 5 national organization, which at that point was not a labor union. It was simply an association, which had been around for going on 10 years at that point. And the movie, of course, the 9 to 5 Jane Fonda movie, grew out of that movement. After the movie came out, they decided, all right, the timing is right. Let's go for forming a women-led National Union of Clerical Workers. And of course, within months, President Reagan backed the union busters and actually busted the Air Traffic Controllers Union. So their new union really was born at a very, very unfortunate time in American history. I mean, they prevailed. They did organize. They did organize thousands of women, but it never got big enough to stand on its really own.
And yet, in 2021, the Service Employees International Union is thriving with success organizing low-wage workers. There's the Office and Professional Employees International Union. Yes, 9 to 5, District 9 to 5, as it was called, didn't remain independent, but a lot of the stuff is part of the fabric of the workplace today.
Yes, it is. SEIU has been, you know, a real leader. The head of SEIU is a woman, Mary Kay Henry. And they're probably that, and maybe CWA, the communications workers, are some of the unions that are most interested in spending resources on organizing unorganized low-wage workers, like a lot of immigrant workers, healthcare workers, daycare workers, home health workers. And you know, 9 to 5, the union, is still very active in Seattle. And that is the very first city that passed the $15 minimum wage. And I think that's because of the big influence of the local 9 to 5 chapter there.
Yeah, and you know, 9 to 5, the organization is still around as well. They have 3 headquarters in Atlanta, Milwaukee, and Denver. and they're still fighting the good fight as well.
The documentary we're watching this month is 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement. It's Julia Reichert and Stephen Bognar who produced and directed this film. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David. This has been fun.
Thanks, David.